This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Alice feels a little bit ill. Tonight she had a party to attend. Said her head felt a little light. She really felt alright. Alice comes home from school at 3, but her parents don't keep the same hours as her, you see. She's got a front door key. Alice makes a snack every day at 4.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my recording studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, the cozy confines here. Well, since last Wednesday, my good friend Pete Coatney was here. We were talking about his love of the band Wham!, among other stuff that just shook the Texas music world to its knees. Since then, man, the fallout. I've gotten a lot of emails, everything from Wham!, some Jack Ingram feedback, etc., from Pete Coatney's podcast. Thanks for listening. Always email us, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me, 817-733-5256. Well, today is a special day, folks. We have a good friend of mine, a songwriter here in Texas, catching up with our old friend Nick Verzosa of John's Guns, a proud Pritchett-produced band here. One of the early bands I produced.
First one in here.
First one in the new room. That's right. We started out with Nick, John's Guns, out of College Station, Texas.
Right.
Rock and roll.
Still there.
Still there. Nick does a lot of playing, songwriting. So the Guns came in here. We actually had the old Larry Dillon, who owns the building, had a small shacky warehouse kind of thing across the tracks from here.
The cement box.
That's right. Did y'all record the Stockyards? We didn't do that, did we?
It was in the box. It was in the cement box right down the road that way.
Right, with the garage door.
With the gun shop right down.
That's right. Got everything you need there.
And...
So John's Guns came in, five-piece band.
Right.
All original stuff.
Yeah.
Save for the great cover of our old friend, P2 Podcast's own, Kurt South.
Yeah, South, man.
John's Guns did a great version of All the Time in the World. Do y'all still play that song?
Oh, we love that song.
That's a great, people like that tune. Y'all did a great job with it.
We did a battle of the bands here at the Elephant for the Range in Dallas, and that was the tune that I think may have been kept bringing us back week after week.
Yeah, y'all had a good run. Y'all got deep into that, didn't you?
When you play, we got second place. It was
awesome.
Bad for the fact that, you know, I piecemealed a band together every week. It was pretty much, I think they were tripped out by the fact that I had a new bass and guitar player.
Yeah.
Every time we came in.
That's right. There's
like,
a skill.
I don't get it, guys. You guys seem like you've been playing together a while. And I was like, no, these guys are just good.
Well, you know, the last podcast, me and Pete, the whole first section we spent on the art of, our whole first segment was the art of keeping the band going. Pete is, of course, he's been Jack's drummer forever. But the reason I got to know Pete is I called Jack, like, hey, man, I need a drummer, dude. I got this gig. And he's like, I'll call Pete, man. We're not playing that night. He'll do it.
Yeah.
And I command it. He's got to rehearse and know the song. He's like, nah, dude, he'll fall right in the line, no problem. So you do, there's a certain art there, because there are bands out there that just quit and break up. Just, man, we hadn't played a gig all years. What happened? Just, man, our bass player got married. Or you're just like, dude, just get on the horn and call somebody else. Well, he doesn't know the songs. Well, you get a guy that can just sort of follow along easily, But That's kind of the art of the deal. So you've I've seen grown accustomed to keeping the. You're not a three-legged table where one leg falls and everything goes over.
You know, we got to fill those gigs. We got to make that money. So we keep it going, and I've built up a good little pool of guys to pull from.
All
here
that,
and there.
Yeah.
And most of them know the tunes by now.
Right.
You know?
Well, it helps when you have the record.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing I tell guys. You know, when you do start playing a lot of shows, guys haven't recorded an album. Or, oh, man, I miss it. I go, man, you got to have those CDs, of course, for fans to get shows and stuff. I go, but most importantly, man, I can't tell you how many Cool and Unusual Punishment Live I've sent to some bass player or drummer. Just, hey, man, just here's 14 songs, mm-hmm. you know, all kind of our live show, kind of listen to it, play along, put on the iPod.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, to write out lead sheets for
yeah,
people.
I go, man, we do it. We don't vary too much from this on the live deal. I mean, you'll get an idea for what we're doing. So, well, that's good, man. Keeping it real. Are all your guys, your drums, bass player dudes here in Fort Worth or College Station spread around?
You know, pretty much the band now is me and Sean. Playing bass still, and he's in College Station with me.
Plus, he's got the PA, right? Is that right. His PA? See, that guy always stays
you know,
in the band.
That's how it started.
That's how he always stays in the band.
Like Sean's a bass player, and he's got a pretty sweet PA. Let's see if he wants to play with us.
He's not fired. We want to make extra effort to keep Sean in the band.
You know, Sean keeps we make extra effort to put him in the band. He keeps finding extra effort to find himself out of the band here and there.
Here and there, but a mainstay, a guy that's stayed in there. He also, didn't he co-write the song, Pen and Ink?
He's definitely, he wrote Pen and Ink.
Yeah,
and,
that was...
Closer to You. He's definitely, and co-wrote Buy, Sell, Trade, the title track.
Right.
So he's been a good...
So a songwriter in his own right. I mean,
for sure.
I remember
sure.
that, if you listen to the John's Guns record, you can, Pen and Ink, really different kind of song. Kind of a jazzy, we did sort of an acoustic kind of deal.
Sure.
I know y'all rock it up a bit more now live, I guess. Is that right?
Right, yeah, it's just tough. We use brushes and stuff in the studio. It's tough to do that live.
Right.
And pull that off for real. But, you know, that's actually talking about the old cement box, the old concrete box. We kept the original track from that for that CD.
That's right.
With the train whistle.
With the train whistle in the background.
That's right.
Coming by. Yeah, that old, we're talking about the, when my studio left the Stockyards, we were temporarily in a building, we're right close to where we are now. It was just a little tiny, concrete shed kind of deal with some carpet in there. And,
for
and
sure.
All the recording gear. There was a kind of a transition period there. I was doing your guys' record. I was doing a McGee Payne album and a thing for a guy named J.D. Clark out of Chico, Texas. So, then we got moved into here. Yeah, this was the first band I tried to do in here. Just a new room and there were some growing pains for me on that. But it came out good, man. But really, the Pen and Ink song was really one of the more standout.
I think so too.
Had just kind of it's something you still listen to and feel like, hey, it's kind of got a cool vibe to it. So check out the John's Guns record. Is it johnsguns.com or is it Nick Verzosa? What do y'all have on?
Oh, you know, we have the MySpace thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You can check. You know, it's like myspace.com, John's Guns, bang bang.
John's Guns, bang bang. Bang, bang. You know. And y'all got some of the tracks on there that we did and stuff
sure,
like that.
Sure. Yeah, most of the tracks are on there. And then the link to my MySpace. Nick Verzosa, is on there, and that's got a ton of the new tunes that we're hoping to put out. I mean, I keep looking at January to getting back in the studio, but you know, the art of keeping a band together.
That's right.
Got to get guys that know the tunes. So,
that's right. That's
and I got to get guys that I'm confident can help me arrange them at their best. You know.
Sure. Well, it's always tough finding those players, man, for things. I got a text from the podcast owner, Kurt South, who's been known to lurk around the Fort Worth Stockyards from time to time. And who was playing up there? Who are you playing with there Saturday night?
Oh, Darren Kozelski.
Yes, Kozelski was playing in there.
Yeah, Kurt got paid, I think, just to run my sound, basically. They had
Kozelski
their own guys come in.
Own guy. So Kurt goes, man, I went up there to run sound. He goes... But I did. Kurt, if you've ever listened to the podcast, our listeners, we love Cal South for his dour, didactic, caustic, cynical view of the world.
Cynical view, yeah. Perfect.
Black humor. Not one to ever throw a compliment around lightly. But I get this text. I'm in we were up in the Flatland Jam in Illinois this last week. I get this text on Saturday, and he just goes, man, doing this Kozalski gig, and he said, man, your guy Nick opened up, man. He goes, man, he brought a damn good crowd in here. So I was glad to hear that. Getting some. I get your texts, you know. Do you have like a text list of people, or just like a friends list or something like that?
Anybody I look at my phone, you know, I've been collecting those names forever, and just, you know, I just throw the mass text on, and I kind of scroll through it. I do it once, scroll through it, and say, okay, these people are from Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just send, you know, not to make anybody feel less special out there, but I send the mass text out and say, hey, come on out. I'm playing.
Well, it's cool. It's a great way to do that, man. You gotta keep those fans informed about what's going on.
Right.
Well, sounds like you got a good response. But you've been playing a lot of solo gigs out there.
Yeah, I went full time music in January, and so left the job. You know, liquidated my assets. You know, rolling around in the old.
You had some assets to liquidate. I'm jealous.
That's basically, that was my truck note. That was basically.
Yeah, that's
about
it.
Yeah. So I took care of that and started driving the old family blue minivan.
Yeah.
Blue Thunder, and she's trucking along. Old, gosh, 170,000 miles on her now.
Yeah.
And
is that mom's old minivan or something?
That's mom's old minivan.
Good deal. You know, Pete Coatney. Coatney shows up in the minivan, family man in his own right. He's always dressed like he's one of the Rolling Stones, you know, just with a scarf and the sunglasses, and he's just driving like a Chrysler Town and Country, you know,
right.
from 1991 or something. It's always a great scene when he pulls up here at Trinidad. Coatney, a couple of car seats in the back,
right, out of place.
Cheerios all over the seat, but man, he's just
rockstar,
rocking
out.
It. He's a rockstar family man. Very, very rare. Very rare indeed.
His kids got mohawks already.
That's right. Yeah, they do. They do. He's already got a whole brood of musicians at his own house. Well, Nick Verzosa is here, singer-songwriter extraordinaire. John's Guns frontman, a man learning the art, perfecting the art of keeping the gigs coming in, getting the bass player, the drummer, keeping it going. We're going to revisit some more John's Guns history. It was one of the first records I produced, really, by a real band. And,
a real band, all right.
And also, I'm going to touch a bit. I'm telling Nick, we were talking about my weekend, my chaotic, crazy weekend, where we went and played the Flatland Jam in Illinois with Pat Green and Jason Boland, and had to be in Corpus Christi, thank you very much, by 5 o'clock the next day. Oh, man, midnight flights. J.W. Marshall, our bass player's mother, driving us to St. Louis at 4 in the morning. And other hilarity ensues.
Did you take the Concorde?
We did. I wish they had the Concorde, but lo and behold, the Concorde, I guess, is no more. We should have had it. We'll talk a bit more about this weekend for Nick Verzosa and myself when we come back.
Asks her father if he has the time. He says 5:30 and pours a glass of vintage wine. He so needs to unwind. Alice sits alone on the balcony, thinking time at home ain't the time that it should be. What is in family?
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, we are here with my good friend, singer-songwriter, catching up with the John's Guns frontman, Nick Verzosa. How you doing, Nick?
I'm good,
man. You got some coffee there. I'm sorry.
Finally.
Golly, it's just sort of a podcast staple.
Yeah.
I keep talking about Coatney, forgive me, but he was in here recently. He leaves such a big mark. He
for sure, yeah.
He won't drink our standard Folgers swill out here, which I've gotten not picky with coffee. But Coatney is a aficionado of coffee.
Of course.
He won't drink anything that isn't like hand-picked and ground with a stone. You know, he always shows up with some gold bag full of Colombian, you know what I mean?
It's right. That coffee that they take out of like bat poop.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's just highly specialized. He shows up, he just takes whatever we got in there brewed up, dumps it down the drain. And he fills the whole filter just overflowing with the grounds.
Oh,
and then he just puts a little bit, tiny bit of water in there. I'm like, dude, that's going to be so strong. You know, that's how you got to have it, man. We're enjoying some coffee here, catching up. Boy, I was telling you a little bit, I was going to let our fans probably have seen on our website the Flatland Jam thing we were doing last weekend. Big weekend for us. You know, we play a lot of weekends, like yourself,
right.
Driving around, picking up shows nearby. Well, JW, our bass player, his brother puts on this event called the Flatland Jam in Effingham, Illinois. And you've met JW, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, familiar with the other guys.
Yeah, man. JW and Stu. So we fly up there on Friday into St. Louis. The great thing is you don't have to take any gear because JW's brother lives up there, Richard, and they've got guitars everywhere. And, oh, man, I got to play through a – so I always like to see what I get. So I show up and, you know, Mike Astley, the Bacon Fat, they've been on the podcast before. I've produced some stuff of theirs. Mike has a vintage 1965 Fender Pro Reverb.
Oh, nice.
Blackface amp. Just really loud and just amazing. And Richard's got like a 72 Gibson SG.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I just plugged straight into that. I don't have a pedal, nothing.
Ooh. Grind it out.
Oh, man, it was just rock and roll, dude. So I've got that. So I was just in tone heaven during our set. It pours down rain all day long, but the clouds clear. Unfortunately, a couple of the local guys got bumped off the bill because the time ran long.
It happens.
But they were paying us so much money, we had to play. Oh, just kidding. But anyway, so we hit the stage. And, man, it was great. We got some big fans of there. We played a bunch of shows there now. That was great. Then Jason Boland comes on, our old friend, Roger Ray and company. Man, Boland's got some fans up there in the Midwest.
I'll bet.
Man, that country music travels well.
Anywhere you find sticks, you'll find Honky Tonk.
He is, man. Out there in the heartland, corn country, the sticks, man, rural grounds out there. So Boland comes out there. Man, he looked great. He just had his hat, you know, and he sounded great. And
that's good.
He's had the same band for a long time, I think.
Right. I think I remember him having like a throat problem not too
long
ago.
Well, he did. He was off the road for a while. He had some polyps. Very common surgery, really.
Yeah.
A lot of singers get polyps on their vocal cords, have them removed. I think that's what he had going on, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
But he was off the road for a while, and I saw a lot of Roger Ray, his great guitar and steel player, kind of looking for some extra gigs and stuff.
Right.
Roger came in and did some great steel work, as he often does on a lot of projects. But, you know, I haven't seen Boland play just a whole lot. Us being kind of more of the rockers, we really don't play a lot of shows with him.
Right.
So it's a unique time to see him. Have you seen Boland play?
Yeah, you know, there's two venues in College Station, basically. You know, you got your Honky Tonkers, where you got your Aaron Watson, Jason Boland, Kevin Fowler, those guys. They all play at the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the rest of
which
the
I've never set foot in
exactly.
My life.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, it's like a year.
But yeah,
roller.
It's a country.
It's you know, you wear your hat and boots there.
That's here, right.
You know.
Max Stalling type venue.
Uh-huh. They want to dance. They want a two-step.
That's right.
And so the rest of the guys make their way over to Harry's.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Well, man, if you think that you can't go on stage in the Midwest and just go, my baby loves me when I'm stoned.
Yeah.
And the crowd just goes nuts. I'm like, man, this plays anywhere. People call it red dirt music, Texas music. I'm like, this works everywhere, man. Not just Texas or red dirt. So Boland was great. I actually had to go back. So after Boland, man, I had to go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We had a long night ahead, as I'll get to. We went back to J-Dub's mom's house. We stay at J-Dub's parents' house, the old family home there in Effingham. So Bev, J-Dub's mom, just shuttles us back to the house for a little sleep. Then we wake up at midnight, come back to the jam. The next band was Luke Bryan,
mm-hmm.
who I didn't know much about. I guess he's kind of an ass-shaking Nashville guy.
Yeah.
A lot of young ladies there, though, to see him. I guess he draws
pretty young boy, I'm sure. You know.
You know. But he did well.
Video star in his own right.
Video music star Luke Bryan. I don't know. And so he played. And then our old friend Pat Green, who I hadn't seen in a long time, played.
Awesome.
And I hate to say I didn't see Pat set. But I heard things went very well. Well,
that's good.
So we come back to the jam at about 12 o'clock when things are winding down. So we hit the outdoor stage. There's always kind of the post-jam out there. As you can see on YouTube, us with Ragweed last year, a lot of fun. So it was us and Matt Poss and Bacon Fat and all those guys were there. And we had played a few songs, a lot of fun. I got to see Pat and all the guys, Michael Terabay, his bass player, who's kind of picked up a lot of bass gigs with me, kind of like Coatney has, you know, a guy you can call.
Right.
Keep on the. You need to put Terabay's number in your phone, Nick.
I'd love to.
He's a guy who can show up and just stay on that root note. You know
I need
mean?
Those guys. I need those guys
you
so
know?
Badly.
You just kind of turn to him and say, hey, man, just G, C, and D, follow me. Here we go. And he'll just follow right along, man. So I saw him, Brendan, Pat's fiddle player, Justin Pollard on the drums.
Sure. Aggie guys.
Man. Yeah, Brett Danaher on guitar. And guys got the same guys. Pat is all the same yeah. guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty cool. So Pat was, funny as always. No one takes over a room like Pat Green.
He's made his career off that. That's
he's
for sure.
He's a guy who's perfected the art of going out in public and putting on a show, man. It's a unique trait, man. It really is. I mean, you read about someone like Bill Clinton, your president. These guys kind of had this magnetic this personality. They don't just kind of walk in somewhere.
No, they glow.
He's over
bit.
In the corner, you know.
Yeah.
Recently, you know, Pat lives here in Fort Worth,
and
I hadn't seen him in years. This was maybe a year or two ago. I was in Borders Books up there. Shopping for Christmas or something. He's quiet in those places. Everybody's just reading. And all of a sudden, man, I just hear this commotion by the front door. You know, just like, what is going on? I look over there. Everybody starts looking around. Here comes Pat. You know, he's got his sunglasses on. He's just doing Christmas shopping. But he's just spewing bullshit to the guys running the cash registers. How's it going? Yeah. Hey, I got to get me some Christmas. I'm running behind here. I'm like, what is going on? I was just kind of, hey, Pat, what's going on? He's like, ah, Phil Pritchard. I was getting big hugs. Ah. You just kind of bear hugs me there. It's just that kind of deal. So it was the right. same kind of situation. Great to see him. So full of personality and life, Pat Green. He's committed to come do the podcast. So look forward to that, folks.
Oh, that's
we'll
awesome.
Catch up with old Pat. Talk about a guy with some stories, man.
Yeah.
Just, you know, he's done a lot,
no
Pat.
Kidding. You know, I remember watching him back in high school then. At just, you know, bumming around here.
Yeah.
Some friends of mine and I went to Pascal High School right here in Fort Worth and I played soccer with a couple of guys whose mom knew Pat real well. And
yeah, yeah.
They would have some private shows and
everybody
kind
knows
of the
Pat.
Same thing
everybody
I'm doing
Pat.
Now, you know.
Yeah.
Where it's just friends call and say, hey, come play my birthday party. You say how much, and say blah 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 blah. You know.
Yeah.
So it's a money gig, and it's a lot of fun, and you basically just go and have a good time with your buddies and party and play some songs. You're gonna do that anyway.
That's right.
So might as well do it. Pat did those a lot. We saw him a lot, real raw and unplugged.
Yeah.
Pat Green back in high school.
Man, well, you know, Pat and I kind of came up together in the '90s. He just started going. He tells the story that, man, I was going to Scruffy Murphy's. I couldn't even get in there. This little bar in Waco near Baylor. And Phil was playing. That's the first time he met me and all this kind of stuff. And, of course, Pat just takes off. He starts playing, man.
Oh, yeah.
Singing about Texas and kicking ass, man. And so man, he takes the thing
beer.
To – he just becomes there's no way to put it. He's just like a phenomenon, just a juggernaut there around the time that I moved to Nashville, like 2001. Well, when I moved back from Nashville – it was about the time Pat moved to Fort Worth.
Right.
So you have a couple things coming together here. You've got Pritchett and his – he's already has a couple kids. He's coming back from Nashville, and kind of, you know, getting back into playing and stuff. I couldn't afford to turn down a gig, man, I mean, at this stage. And Pat was riding high. Dude. This was right around wave-on-wave time. What was that, 2002 or something?
Around then, yeah.
Something like that. So I get this call from – I can't believe I'm going to tell the story, but here we go. Pat, a good friend of ours, was putting on a charity event at Colonial Country Club.
For sure.
And says, Phil, can you – we want you to come play this big, huge charity golf event. And it's like on a Monday, like, you know –
Well, yeah, it's,
you can't turn down those gigs. Yeah. I mean, you know, Friday, Saturday, you got another gig or something like that. You maybe don't. Man, if you can go make a chunk of cash on a Monday afternoon, it was nothing. Like, man, feels like 4 to 6. You're just playing on the at Colonial Country Club. People are going to be playing golf, eating lunch, just playing some songs. No big deal. I kind of thought, man, that'd be kind of embarrassing a little bit, just over there playing a song.
Kind of regressive or something.
Depressing a little bit. But man, the money was really good. And I couldn't afford to just go, oh, I'm too good for that. So I said, man, no problem. And I knew the lady putting it on, great woman. I said, you bet. So I throw in my two speakers on sticks and head out to Colonial.
It's my life.
And I'm just thinking, man, I'm just going to keep a low profile. I'm just going to go over there, play by the I'm like, where am I? They're like, man, you're down there by the Coke machines, right around the turn. You know, the ninth hole. There's like a buffet over there, and there's a little spot for me, and I'm kind of, okay, I'll just go there. I'll just strum my guitar. I'll just play a couple hours, get my money, go home, be great. Well, what happens, dude? All of a sudden, I hear, it's just like Borders Bookstore. Oh, no. Over the hill, dude, comes about 100 high school boys chanting and screaming, and in the middle of them is Pat Green.
Of course.
My old friend Pat. I'm like, oh, boy. Oh, no. Here comes Pat. He's got a driver in one hand and like 3 Miller Lights in the other. He's just, hey, let's just hope I can keep it in the fairway. Just, you know, the whole, I mean, it's just all of a sudden, here it comes. Here comes the tidal wave. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm over here tuning up. I'm playing a gig. So I kind of, he sees me somewhere. Hey, Phil, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? He's just surrounded by the press and stuff. You know, this is big. I'm like, oh, gee, how's it going, Pat? What's going on? What are you doing, man? I said, man, I'm playing here today. He's like, playing? Me too, man. What hole you play? Are you going off on 15? I'm like, no, I'm not playing golf. I'm playing down by the Coke machine and sandwiches. I'm playing a gig here. You know, Pat, to his credit, he kind of smiled and goes, oh, that's cool, man. Hey, I'll have to check that out later or something. But, dude, I was just like, oh, my gosh. What a beating.
Yeah.
It's like I walked away from that just going, oh, good grief. Just went back there, picked up my guitar, you know, pushed aside a couple of bags of potato chips and, you know, cleared some space there on the platform by the Coke machine and, you know, played Maria.
Right.
Oh, man. And just watched Pat teeing off and drinking and with his gallery back
there. The entourage follows.
Oh, boy. Well, man, I'll say I've clawed back a lot since then.
Yeah.
That was probably, I don't know, 6 years ago or so.
Definitely.
But, yeah, I was definitely at a point, it happens in any career, any life, where you're kind of starting over. I'd gone to Nashville and spent a year, you know, trying to get stuff going. I wasn't around as much. And, boy, it was hilarious. I'd come back seeing Pat and all that. So that was a tough day for him. So it was so great to see him. And they were actually, so we drive from the Flatland Jam show.
Sure.
All the way to St. Louis in the middle of the freaking night. J-Dub's mom drives us there in the family truck. And we've got a 6 a.m. flight out of St. Louis to Dallas. Now, we've got to get to Corpus Christi to play a show at Bayfest Sunday at 5 p.m.
Oh, no.
So, man, it was going to be a scramble. And, I mean, there were a couple times I go, man, we're not going to make it. Because it's still about a 6.5, what is it, about 6.5 hours to Corpus from here? Something.
About that. It's a little trek.
And, man, I keep trying alternate routes and stuff. And it's just, you got to stay to the interstate, man. San Antonio. But we made it, man. We fly, and Pat and his band were all on the flight to DFW. So, I mean, we got to hang out and tell stories. And it was a lot of fun. So, but we made it. We flew into Dallas, jumped in our car. Right off the plane at about 7:45 in the morning, just drove all the way to Corpus and got there, played the gig, and we made it. Here we are today. And, just a crazy – we don't really do much traveling like that, the flying around and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets tough when you – you know, those good-paying gigs, you know, you feel like you need to scramble to make them, you know.
Right.
And it's so funny because, you know, Pat and his guys are on the plane. You can tell they've done this a lot. You know, mm-hmm. it was just routine. But it was killing me. Good grief. Oh, man. Exhausting. So you played, you were over there at, so the show went good at, how'd you get the big crew out there for the, White Elephant gig?
Man, I tell you.
Kozlowski solo show.
Fush. It's, you know.
First of all, was South a decent sound man or was he just breaking your balls?
From what I understand,
sounded great.
Never sounded better. you know.
Never sounded so better than Kurt South Kurt. Himself at the knobs.
We'll plug Kurt there.
Oh, you man.
Well, he'd love to hear that. He always texts me when he does those shows.
Right.
Just talking smack about whoever, just who.
Oh, I'm
this
sure.
Guy, God,
we had a great night talking smack.
If I have to sit here and listen to any more of this guy's songs, I'm going to stab myself in the leg.
Mentioned something about 8 different people telling him to do the same thing. And
yeah.
And no, you know, thinking of 18 different ways he could spend that money better and that kind of thing.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh dude, he's always in a sound man role is difficult for him. He doesn't do it a whole lot, but I think he does go up there occasionally.
Right.
Cuz there's no one else to call, and I know the White Elephant loves Kurt. He does great there with his own band. They'll call him, "Hey man, you want to come over here and help us with the show or something." So South, man, he'll scramble up there. And not only do you get great sound with him at the board, you get a lot of unsolicited advice, a lot of great stories, you get that cynical, dark view of the world.
You know, the advice, it's great to listen to. I sit back and I have all these things, being a young guy, a pretty young guy myself, mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, relatively new to this whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
We've only been playing for 4 years or so.
Did you start playing in college, guitar and stuff, or have you been playing longer than that?
I picked up a guitar when I was in first grade.
Yeah?
And, you know, it was the same old deal. You're a little 6-7-year-old kid, and you say, man, I want to be a rock star.
Yeah, right.
And then mom hands you a classical guitar and says, go to TCU and take lessons.
Yeah,
and
right, go, right.
What is this?
This is no good.
Where's my electric guitar? I don't understand this.
That's right.
You know, I want earrings and tattoos and stuff.
That's
like
right,
that.
Man.
But,
rock
you know,
it out.
That kind of got repressed under the thumb of my well-informed parents, mm-hmm. and then college came and
there's no stopping you.
Yeah, I got out of the house. And
so who are some of the first bands you really, you know, you love music, but who are some of those going way back or just that were, you know, you found inspiring? You watched the show and you said, man, that guy's doing what I want to do. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Who are some of those bands maybe you got to see early on or listen to?
Well, I listened a lot, you know, my influence is a lot based off of what I listened to in the car while my folks were driving me around.
Yeah.
And you know, God,
anyone's first real exposure to music, you know, you see
James Taylor,
yeah.
Doobie Brothers, you know, great songwriter guys,
right,
you know,
right.
Great acoustic guitar players, you know.
Right.
Oh, love man. That stuff. So you know, this is pretty much the reason. They didn't make me want to be rock stars because, I mean, they're folk guys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the rock stars guys, I mean, you know, whatever was on MTV in the 80s. That's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, throwing that out there.
Start watching that stuff.
Love and, it, you know.
Well, in college, who were some of the bands you'd go see coming through? Start listening to like who?
To be honest
probably
with you.
Pat and those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
I mean,
sure.
That was my generation coming right. out of high school was Pat, Corey, and you
mm-hmm.
coming up, man. And you guys, and then Ragweed, I mean, I remember I've been to one of your shows where Ragweed was opening for y'all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was a ways back, you know?
And, that is a ways back. That is a ways back.
Guys like Coup de Gras.
Yeah, Coup de Gras playing a lot back then. Yeah. Coming and to Harry's and packing
those
it in.
Guys, you know? And that was just when I think that Texas country red dirt thing was coming around and saying, hey, I think we had our own little sound here.
Right.
We're not so much honky tonk. We're not so much rock and roll. We're a little bit in between.
Right.
And I know the kids in my high school and the kids my age growing up through that, they loved it. And
yeah,
we packed
yeah.
out shows. And it was all about a good time. Like you mentioned, Pat Green mm-hmm. filling up a room just with his personality alone. Man, we
oh,
loved
yeah.
to watch that.
Just
go
yeah.
down to New Braunfels, hit the river.
Right.
Catch a Pat Green show.
You know,
at
up until
Ice
Pat,
House.
Up until Pat, the Texas guys, there was an impetus, a stress on, you know, you had like Joe Ely, Jerry Jeff Walker, of course.
Right,
Guy
but it
Clark.
Was more. It was more conservative.
Conservative, you know, more, and song based,
right.
very.
Write the songs.
I don't want to say serious.
Right.
To a degree, but I think that's probably right. The Texas, if you're a Texas songwriter, it was serious. It was mm-hmm. it was Towns Van Zandt.
For
it
sure.
was Steve Earle.
Guy
it was
Clark, man.
Guy Clark, and Pat comes along, and I hope this isn't this is not a jab at him in any way.
Oh, but no.
He just had more of that kind of Jimmy Buffett type atmosphere.
For sure, he brought the
at
party.
His show. Yeah, and it was really a lot different than what you were used to seeing. Even Jack Ingram starting out, man, he was still a songwriter guy.
Mm-hmm.
Then
he starts singing about Barbie dolls.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. You know, I mean, things evolve, you know. And when Pat was just the first, we opened for Pat the first time ever was in Lubbock, where he was going to school. And I remember just watching him play. I mean, there was no pretense, no, I wish everyone would just be quiet, yeah, listen to my songs. You know what I'm saying? And you saw a lot of that where I was living in Austin. That was just how you did it, man.
Oh, it's still that way there.
Singer, songwriter. And, dude, Pat just comes out with, like, three strings on an acoustic guitar. Starts playing the Dukes of Hazzard song. Just opens a beer and just, I mean, that was the show, man.
Right.
It was all about the crowd and who is it. And it was it sounds real obvious now. You're like, well, duh, isn't that what it's all about? Because that's what everybody tries to do. I go, but, right, man, I really hadn't seen it. The only guys I'd been watching were those people we were talking about, mm-hmm, the more songwriter guys and, you know, even the country guys like George Strait, and, you know, they kind of stood there. And, of course, you already had kind of Garth Brooks,
right,
was that way
that
in Nashville, the big show kind of. And Pat kind of brought that into the Texas. I don't know if he'd say Garth Brooks had some kind of an influence on him. Probably not. But he had that sort of atmosphere around his deal that was very – it was different than what anybody else was trying to do.
He was there to have a good time, period.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
It worked for him.
It worked for him. And, man, he had those – I remember just seeing him. I mean, he had like 50 T-shirts, man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he had a record out yet. But I mean, he just had – you know, I mean, it was – man, and man, you saw – and he was one of the first guys.
Oh.
I just saw that merchandise, man, everywhere I went. There'd be dudes walking around with a Pat Green T-shirt. I'm just like, how the hell does that guy know about Pat Green?
Every truck in my high school had a Pat Green sticker on
it. They had a sticker on there with a star and a
Texas singer-songwriter.
And, you know, there's even I even heard some stories about that logo, the star with the Texas singer, was so ubiquitous there in the 90s. Other people would start using variations of it for,
I'm sure,
like a star on the back that would say, like, Texas Tech University or – I don't know, some fraternity party or something.
I've totally seen those, yeah.
That there were even some cease and desist deals from Pat.
Is that right?
People saying, like, hey, man, that's our logo. You know, that would be an infringement. But that just goes to show you, man, how popular that stuff was, man, mm-hmm, and that merchandise and the party and stuff like that. We ended up opening for Pat when he did that first big College Station Live recording at the Shadow Canyon. What's it called now? It was the Midnight Rodeo.
Gosh. Now it's, you know, Daisy
called
Dukes. And
it
no music
changes. But he did a live recording there. We opened up the show, and I remember my band, a couple of Austin veterans, Doug Holm and Keith Robinson.
Nice.
They played the gig, and, man, they just sat there. And they were older guys. You know, they were probably in their 30s, and we were in our mid-20s. And, man, they just sat there slack-jawed, just like me, as Pat Green took the stage,
yeah,
to just 2,000 screaming people, and they knew every word. It was, man, at that point, everyone was just like, what is going on here? I mean, we all thought you play gigs and bars and scratch out a living. What is this? It was amazing, man. So catching up with Pat this weekend, funny, told a lot of old stories, and who knows, man? He's here in Fort Worth now. He's going to come do the podcast, he said. So we'll see, man. I'm going to try to hold him to it. Well, man, in our vault, Nick talked about loving the songwriters, chief among them, maybe the crown prince of all 70s singer-songwriters, James Taylor.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Oh, well, we were looking over. Nick was looking in the vinyl, as all guests are encouraged to do. Pulls out the great Sweet Baby James. So we're going to take a look at that great record in the vault when we come back.
There is a young cowboy, he lives on the range. His horse and his cattle are his only companions. He works in the saddle and he sleeps in the canyons, waiting for summer, his pastures to change. And as the moon arises, he sits by his fire, thinking about women and glasses of beer, and closing his eyes as the dogies retire, he sings out a song which is soft but it's clear, as if maybe someone could hear. Good night, you moonlight ladies, rock a lullaby, sweet baby Jane. Deep greens and blues are the colors I choose. Won't you let me go down in my dreams and rock her by sweet baby Jane.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Thank you for joining us on the P2 Podcast. For listening at philpritchett.com and all over the world, of course, every Wednesday night on radiofreetexas.org. Nick Verzosa of John's Guns has been kind enough to join us here on the podcast. Thank you, Nick.
Hey, thank you, man. I was having a good time.
It is, man. Good to sit here and talk about some music. Well, man, some music all of us love. All of us. James Taylor, man.
Yeah.
Especially those early albums. Such greatness. Nick pulls out Sweet Baby James. I believe his second album, I was thinking that this album was the one made on the Beatles album, the Beatles label Apple.
Right.
But it turns out that's not the case, I don't think.
This is a Warner Brothers.
So good night, you moonlight ladies. Rock up by sweet baby Jane. Deep greens and blues are the colors I choose. Won't you let me go down in my dreams and rock up by sweet baby Jane.
Mediocre songs the rest of my life. At least I don't have
a heroin addiction. Well, you know, it's like Kurt and I had a podcast talking about on albums where the guy on the cover looks too happy,
yeah.
Like he's wearing a floral print shirt and it's like holding a coconut. I'm like, that album sucks, you know. But on albums like this, where James is just staring off into space, kind of the long hair, mm-hmm. It's probably, you know, give it a chance. It might be pretty good. Sweet baby James, you know. Oh, let me see. Asher produced, Asher founded Peter Asher and brought him to the Beatles. He was the first non-British act on the Apple label.
Yeah.
Taylor. Oh man, Sweet Baby James, Sunny Skies, Steamroller, Country Road. I mean, even to this day, when he goes plays, man, he's got to play about, 80% of these songs probably in his shows.
Oh man.
Fire and Rain, what are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So ubiquitous, man. Part of just the whole 70s songwriter wave there. All those dudes. I got all their stuff over there, whoever.
For sure.
Carole King, Cat
Simon
Stevens.
Simon Garfunkel, you know. All these
yeah,
guys.
Man. God, who else was in that kind of 70s wave? Carole King wrote You've Got a Friend.
You've Got a Friend, yeah.
Yeah. So he ran in that group. Carly Simon, of course, who he ended up marrying.
Right.
And just a... I think that was maybe a tough time for him.
Maybe.
Marriaged. That's when he had the mustache. Didn't he kind of the mustache?
Oh, yeah. He went 70s and, you know, putting on the bell bottoms.
Bell bottoms,
70s. Got the big mustache. Mudslide
strung out on heroin.
Just
married to Carly Simon. Good grief. I need to read the James Taylor biography.
Yeah.
This is like whetting my appetite to figure out what he's all about. But, man, talk about a guy that just people love, man. I mean, anyone you talk to, he's. There's a lot of bands, I think, that people love. Oh, man, they're great. They recognize the greatness. But very few bands and acts where you hear that, man, this is a guy that this is people's absolute favorite person.
Right.
Favorite act. I think every act has people that think like that, but Taylor's got a lot of that, man.
Mm-hmm. He's absolutely
my friend
my
Max Stalling, you know. I mean, Taylor was his guy. I've heard Garth Brooks say that James Taylor, man, is my favorite singer-songwriter.
For sure.
And such a great guitar player.
Yeah, that's
a lot of people don't realize.
What kills me is that, I mean, that's the reason I picked it up in the first place, listening to that. And I've been playing for 20 years. I still can't do some of the stuff he does, you know.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, he's
his fingers are, it's just all... finger picking, you know.
It's what separates him from and a lot of those guys back then is just their practice.
Mm-hmm.
They put in those 10,000 hours we always talk about of just skill and
coordination.
We have so many so many bands out there, you know, they all sit there and they got a guitar and they're all just banging on and it's not that it's not good or it's not that it's bad, it's just not really special and great.
Right.
So when Taylor sits down with that guitar and he starts just finger picking and singing in some song he wrote in his guitar style. It's mesmerizing because you just don't see. You don't walk into Guitar Center and some dude sitting in the corner playing like that.
No, not at all.
It's very, very special. Whereas when you watch, people get pissed when I talk about Coldplay or something. Man, he's got dudes playing that crap in Guitar Center left and right. You know, just whatever, just banging away on something mediocre. I don't know, but there's no denying the guy's talent. You know, and he was a good symbol of that sort of time where you had to be great to be on a label. You couldn't say, they weren't like, hey, you know, he's just a hot thing, or he's good looking, or man, you had to impress the freaking Beatles. That's what you had to do to get signed. How good are you? Do the Beatles think you're worth a damn?
Yeah.
Well, that's what Taylor says. Gives you some indication. Hey, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's put out his album.
He might last a little while.
Yeah. I mean, you could just walk in there and. Oh, so anyway,
this is a sound investment.
That's right. So Taylor, man, and you know, of course, since then he's cleaned up. He just guy tours in summer, just cleans house out on the road.
Gosh, my earliest memories of going to concerts when I was a little kid. That's, you know, my folks taking me out to the Starplex.
Oh, did you go see Taylor?
Oh yeah, every summer.
Every summer.
Every summer we were there.
Out on the lawn, huh?
I'm sitting there. My first.
You're like me. You still call it Starplex. It's had like four names since then, but I still call it Starplex.
It was the Starplex.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Starplex Amphitheater.
So, that's, you know, a lot of early memories about live music and I think my first experience, my first at least. You know, smelling experience with marijuana and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, out there at Starplex. He just fires up, you got a friend.
Seven or eight years old and thinking, what's that? And my mom going, that's marijuana, Nick. That's
It's not for you.
Don't do that. You're seven.
Yeah, dude, he just, you know, I just envy, I so admire of course, he's made albums with bands. We were talking about how he... you have horns, you tour a time with a band or a horn section or an orchestra and, you know, whatever else. But when you just get right down to it, he can go out there with him and his guitar and just mesmerize for 2 hours.
Definitely.
That's so rare, man. I mean, and I aspire to that. I still like to go out and play solo shows, and it's challenging.
They're great.
If you can pull it off, and it keeps your edge. You know,
puts all the pressure on you. You're not looking at anybody else.
And I've read articles about Jay Leno.
Yeah.
You know, he's got this Tonight Show gig. Man, he's still like come through Fort Worth, like Casa Mañana or somewhere, and do a stand up gig. He'd go do some dates. And everybody go like, man, why do you go out here and do clubs and stuff? And Leno goes, man, I've got to be able to go on stage and be funny, tell modern story. He goes, man, I just feel like I've got to stay sharp.
You have to keep up
chops. I feel like I've got to stay up, keep my chops up.
Yep.
And if I don't go out and do that occasionally, I start to lose it. I start to lose my timing. I start to lose my confidence. And it starts to dull me a little bit. And I think that's anybody out there trying to be in a band or coming to record at Trinidad World Recording. man, practice, man. Just keep playing along with those songs you love. Learn different techniques. Learn how to play slide a little bit, finger pick a little bit. Just mess around with it, and man, stuff will start to reveal itself to you.
I mean, you don't have to be the best at any one of those things.
That's right. But if you can be versatile, and at the end of the day, be able to go sit in a corner of a room somewhere and be entertaining, tell a funny story, sing a good song, play a little guitar solo. Hey, that guy's pretty good. And the better you can do that, the better off you're going to be. Because who knows if you're going to get the right booking agent, he can get you on this show, and you know, your bass player and your drummer quits, and we couldn't get the horn section and all. That's all. Those are all variables you cannot control.
Exactly.
But you can control how well you can sit there with that guitar, and you say, man, I'm really working on my craft, on my trade, you know. And Taylor's just a shining example of that, a guy who just goes into a, you know, bass hall or a you know, some sort of theater, or out there on the lawn, sits on a stool with his guitar, and everyone's just silent. And he just sits there and starts playing all those great songs.
Make it easy on the sound guy because everything's going to sound good. Crank up the two channels.
You know, the ticket price doesn't go down if it's just James Taylor. It's just him? Oh, well, we're not paying $50. No, you get the $50 for 10,000 people.
Right.
And he just takes it all, man. And that's a very, very unique category that someone like him is in. Well, man, Sweet Baby James, honestly, I haven't listened to a whole lot. I know all his other hits and stuff.
Right.
But, man, this one was something I had young, my parents had, laying around. Sweet Baby James, second album from James Taylor. Just fantastic. Just I mean, you'll know every song on there.
Good mix of you know, the singer-songwriter stuff. Like, you get a little mix of country stuff in there on top of the folk stuff. And not only that, but, I mean, he throws you some blues.
Yeah, he's got the steamroller and all that.
Steamroller blues.
Still just, you know, loose, in the show with that, doesn't he?
Oh, he's got to.
I'm steamroller, baby.
Yeah.
And I'm going to roll right over you. You know, he played to Take It Easy by the Eagles. Take it easy. He played that banjo part on there.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he pops up on all kinds of...
Wow.
Yeah, in the 70s. You go back and look at those singer-songwriter 70s
albums.
That's
a cool blurb.
Yeah, dude. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Because no, that's funny, because that's a memorable part, too.
It is. There's that finger picking. He can play anything, dude.
Yeah.
James freaking Taylor. Pick it up, Sweet Baby James. If you got the greatest hits or something, or you got some of his older stuff, strung out with the mustache.
Yeah, you know, the greatest hits, that some of those tunes there on Sweet Baby James won't be on the greatest hits, but there's some of the better ones on there.
Oh, no question.
Sure.
Dude, and just a great James Taylor starting kit, man. Sweet Baby James, pick it up. Well, Nick Verzosa has been here. John's Guns, bang, bang.
Bang,
the
bang.
Record is out there. Is it on the MySpace page? You can check it out, listen to it.
CD Baby,
iTunes. CD Baby, iTunes,
whatever
John's
you
Guns.
Want.
Produced by Phil Pritchard. If you want to hear just the earliest incarnation of Trinidad here in the new room, some quirks on there, but some great moments on there. Man, we had a great time making it. All the guys, Sean and Brad and
BJ and Rob.
Yeah. I remember y'all cutting those vocals in the office in there.
In the office,
you and BJ on the same mic.
That's right.
And they're singing those fun songs.
Oh yeah, a few of those were just one, you know, hit and quit. That's
one
it.
Take. Yeah, one man, take. Y'all did good, man. A band after my own heart. Kind of did it in one take, and had a lot of fun doing it. Well, thanks for joining us here today, Nick, on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
Good luck in all music things. If Kurt South ends up running sound for you again, give him a hard time for me, if you would, please. Well, that has been our show for this edition of the podcast. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me 817-733-5256. Book the full band. Man, we've been traveling around playing all over the country. All sorts of festivals, events, backyard barbecues. You'll be surprised what we can do for you. We'll roll into town and rock it out, but you got to call or email first. Also, if you're a hobby band or a songwriter and you want to record some songs, make an album or something, it's what we do here at Trinidad. We do it better and cheaper than anyone else. So give us a call. Come on over and at least tour the facilities here in Fort Worth. Let me buy you a free chicken fried steak. That's all I can offer. Me and Nick, I think, are going to get chicken fried steak. You
have
a across the street here,
Dixie House. It's been a while, but I remember those studio days every day.
Every day at Dixie
every
House across
day.
The street.
What's the special today?
Chicken fried steak. Yeah. I think I live on it now. So we're going to go do it, man. Well, thanks for joining us here on the podcast. Stay tuned. Keep your ears on out there, and thanks for joining us. Y'all take care.
Well, I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee, and I'm bound for Louisiana, my own true love for to see. It did rain all night the day I left, the weather was bone dry, the sun was so hot I froze myself. Suzanne, don't you go on and cry. I said, oh, Susanna, now don't you cry for me. As I come from Alabama with this banjo on my knee. Well, I had myself a dream the other night when everything was still. I dreamed that I saw my girl Suzanne, she was coming around the hill. Now the buckwheat cake was in her mouth, the tear was in her eye. I said that I come from Dixieland, Suzanne, don't you break down and cry. I said, oh, Susanna, now don't you cry for me. 'Cause I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee.